Hi, you're listening to Youth Beat Radio. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. The rules of rugby, the story of a boy connecting with his grandfather, and a discussion of bullying and nonviolence. All of this and more will be discussed on today's episode. But first, Hunger Games was released in theaters on March 21st, and as Jeannie Cantwell reports, you can immerse yourself in the film by taking a trip down to Asheville, North Carolina.
You've read the books, maybe even twice, and now you've seen the Hunger Games brought to life on the big screen. If you find yourself still wanting more from the series, why not take a trip down to Asheville, North Carolina for the ultimate Hunger Games experience? Want to see where Katniss lives, or possibly the bakery that PETA's family owns? Then take a trip to the Henry River Mill Village just outside Charlotte where these scenes were filmed. Maybe you're more of the adventurous type. Then how about taking a hike through DuPont State Recreational Forest where Katniss and Gale hunt for food to keep their families alive. Hike up the trail a bit and you'll come to Triple Falls, the 120-foot trio of waterfalls with boulders the size of minivans. This site might bring back memories of different scenes in the film, such as Katniss escaping from fellow tributes as she runs across the top of the highest waterfall. If you look closely, you might be able to spot where PETA camouflaged himself to blend in with his rock surroundings at the bottom of Triple Falls. The Hunger Games experience features tours, locations, venues, and businesses that supported the making of the film. And while there visiting, you can check into the Hotel Indigo in Asheville, where the film stars Jennifer Lawrence, Josh Hutcherson, and Woody Harrelson stayed during the shoot. With U.S. fans shelling out $152.5 million at the box office over opening weekend, and with 26 million copies of the books in print in the United States alone, North Carolina travel sites are optimistic that the story will bring many more tourists to these unique locations.
For some people, spring break was filled with movie watching and cookouts. But for 84 volunteers, their break was spent camping out around a build site in Mexico. Maggie Fitz reports.
This past spring break, 84 people, ranging from high schoolers to parents to youth leaders, gave up their spring break to go to Mexico on a mission trip with First Community Church. They were able to build 6 houses through More Ministries.
We stayed there for about 8 days. We didn't shower. We all stayed in tents.
The overall mission of this trip was to create 6 two-room houses for Mexican families.
Families in Mexico were so appreciative. They had houses that were in really poor conditions. The roofs were made out of things like cardboard and other unsustainable materials. So what we did is we gave them a two-room house for them and their family.
These students definitely had to work as a team to get these houses done, and in doing so, this created lifelong friendships for many of them.
Crazy in the beginning because all of our tents were flooding. I had a 6-person tent, but 3 girls ended up coming to our tent because their tent had flooded completely. So we had 9 girls in 1 tent. But through all of this, our bonds just got so much closer. And the best part is like campfire time, and everyone sits around the campfire and sings like Akita songs. And
I really enjoyed like campfire time. It's called tiki time, like around the fire with the whole group. You sing songs and talk at night. My favorite.
Yeah, and creating a bond with everyone, that was awesome.
Being yourself is an important life lesson to learn as a high schooler, and that is exactly what these students took from this trip.
Everyone just really gets along, and it's a really accepting environment. Everyone can just be themselves, and we call it the Akita spirit, but it's really fun. It's a really fun place to get to know everyone.
You learn to value the small things in life, like friends and family, and you learn how to be yourself.
Despite the language barrier, many students were able to connect with the Mexicans in other ways.
My family had about 4 kids, and it was really fun playing with them. Like, it was really hard to try and talk to them, but just through what we did, our actions and stuff, like hugging them and giving them piggyback rides, it was really cool because then you could really connect and you didn't have to talk or anything.
My family was really large, so we had 2 groups building 2 houses for them, and they had like a lot of kids, and we played 4-square and hopscotch, and it was just a ton of fun, even though you couldn't like communicate with them, just like small amounts. It was just a ton of fun playing with them.
Although it means giving up their spring break, these students love to participate in this trip because of the overall experience.
a lot of times people are like, oh, why would you want to give up your spring break to go build houses, especially in like the rain and the snow. But it's really just such like a refreshing experience. This is my second trip, and I'll definitely go next year too. Every year is different, and just seeing these people who honestly have nothing, the children play with sticks in the dirt, and they're so content and happy with what they do have. It just is really humbling, and it makes you want to take their energy and bring it back. People get
ready as a train. Next up, I find out how students around Central Ohio are spreading the word that it is time to end violence among youth and give peace a chance. All you need is faith to hear the dealers honking. Don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. Young children, teenagers, and parents gathered in the gymnasium at the newly renovated Lyndon McKinley High School on March 31st for the 8th Annual Peace March. Though it was 10 in the morning on a Saturday, spirits were high as a DJ made rounds around the room to groups of young participants and started a Soul Train style line for those older members of the crowd. The march is coordinated by Strategies Against Violence Everywhere, which is referred to as SAVE and SAVESnet. Rosetta Perry, the SAVESnet coordinator at South High School, reflects on this year's march shortly afterward.
Well, the Peace March today is probably the largest one that we've had, and we want more people in the communities to get involved. When we have our Peace March, it's for everybody. People in the community can march with us, because the Peace March, while we're marching around the city promoting peace and chanting, that's not the whole purpose of the event. We come back to the meeting place and we do activities, and we have entertainment, motivational speakers, we have rappers and poets.
Never had to worry about being hungry. Real brothers hold each other down when they need the money. Drank from the same cup, broke the same bread at the table, vowed to never play the role of Judas and commit betrayal.
This year's speakers included poets, dancers, and singers from Transit Arts Group, The Amazing T Street, and City from the local radio station Power 107.5. But as Tracy Thornton, program coordinator at East High School, explains, activities centered on promoting nonviolence have to continue throughout the school year. SAVESnet tries to
empower them, not just to, you know, these events are great to have, but on a daily basis to make better choices, to not fight, to, you know, resolve conflict peacefully. Getting focused on things that are positive, like graduating high school, you know, choosing some of the more fun aspects of life. You know, that's one of the programs. Aspects about SAVE is that it is fun as well as challenging, and structurally allowing the kids to learn how to be leaders in their communities and amongst their peers as well.
SAVE holds other events like Peace Week, a week dedicated to spreading strategies for nonviolence in schools, or the SAVE Awards, in which students perform live or videotaped acts focused on youth issues. The next SAVE Awards is on May 3rd at the Lincoln Theater. SAVESnet members learn to lead their peers by example. They meet each week and plan other special community activities such as blood drives. Perry's group at South High School meets several times per week.
I have an average of 87 kids on the roll that have joined and committed to SAVESnet. I should say join, but I have about 40 that commit. And they meet at lunchtime 3 days a week. And when they meet, they have group discussions about any issues that a teenager would deal with. Relationships, family problems, school, teacher problems, just anything that affects their life, they get to discuss it and come up with solutions and resolutions on how to make it better. And they become a SAVESnet family.
Though these discussions are often student-led, SAVE also provides students with activities and resources about conflict resolution and other important matters.
So we're equipping them with tools and information of things they can actually use in a real situation where someone may be bullying them or bullying a friend. or just treating them bad, you know? So they're able to stand up and have a voice, and they know what to say and how to handle it, or how to go tell an adult and things like that.
And Perry says it's essential that those adults actually choose to listen to children, because it opens up a forum for real discussion.
If that kid feels comfortable talking to you, they may tell you something serious that's going on, and you may be able to step in and intervene and help.
Freshman Tajanae has been in SavesNet for 1 year and feels she's already an important part of an invaluable community.
I've been, helping and speaking about different problems and ways that we can help with the community. The most cause of teen suicide is bullying, and in SavesNet, we all just talk about bullying, and we all share our feelings about it. So, it's helpful because we have people in there who don't judge us. We come together, and we became a family. But when you go out into the real world and you're outside of school, it's different because there's a lot of violence and people are, dying and stuff, like the Trayvon Martin situation. And it's just violence everywhere. But when we're in SavesNet, everything's okay. We don't have to have a problem with anything.
Here's what I need you to understand. I will not cry for Trayvon Martin if I can't cry for Lee Bellamy. I will not cry for Trayvon Martin if I can't cry for Vanessa, whose boyfriend shot her in the back.
Trayvon Martin was discussed several times during the speeches and poems, but SavesNet's view on the situation is clear. They mourn for the death of any and all young people, and these deaths are happening around the United States every day.
And I'm here to tell you, young people, enough is enough.
In fact, the night before the march, a teen on the east side was wounded by gunfire, and a few days afterward, a 17-year-old girl was found by her father, shot dead.
We mentioned his name because it's in the media, but along with that, we had a moment of silence to make sure every single person who has had a friend or family member killed by an act of violence, we recognize them too. So SavesNet, we're not just pinpointing one person, but we're trying to make people more aware, young people and adults, more aware of how serious the problem really is. When we have people stand up, if you know someone that dealt with violence or you witnessed violence, almost everyone in the gym stood up. We have to have as much concern about our kids here in Columbus, Ohio, that's getting killed, as much concern as we have for Trayvon, who's all the way in Florida. That same care and concern needs to be equal across the board. We don't want any young person dying through violence.
The march, at least, did catch the attention of passersby. Residents stood on their porches as the marchers passed. Some were still in their pajamas. And cars along Cleveland Avenue honked in support of the children's pleas for peace. For YouthBeat Radio, I'm Anna Siriano. Bullying has been a problem in schools for a long time, and something as simple as a carelessly used word can become a huge contributor to this problem. Vinnie Bonta reports on Upper Arlington's efforts to help end the use of the R word.
Spread the Word to End the Word is a national campaign to stop the use of the word retarded. I interviewed Upper Arlington High School multi-handicapped teacher Kim Hudson on how she heard of this movement and why it means so much to her.
Our campaign is working to end the R word, the use of the word retarded, or retard, in everyday language in high school students. We first heard of the problem from our friends in Gahanna. We pair with a class from Gahanna Lincoln High School, and they've run this campaign for a couple years, selling thousands and thousands of t-shirts, and they kept telling us, we gotta get on board, and we just thought it'd be a great project for Upper Arlington High School to take on and work on promoting respect and good attitude in our school.
The movement to stop the use of the R word is not just local. The fight to stop the use of the R word has gotten as big as a 30-second public service announcement with self-advocate Lauren Potter, an actress on the hit show Glee. Also, co-star Jane Lynch wants the world to promote and stop the use of the R word. Mrs. Hudson also talks about how Upper Arlington and her multi-handicapped class plans on spreading the word and their goals for this program.
Okay, our mission in this project is not to completely end the use of the R word, but we just hope that people are more aware of the use of this word when they're using it with their friends or in the hallways or maybe just even on Facebook or on Twitter or things like that, that it does affect people and we all hear it and we all know what's going on, but just to think about it before you say it.
How often do we know what troubles the people around us are going through or have gone through? Often, a little consideration can help connections form that we never thought possible. A lesson demonstrated by this piece of fiction written and performed by Matt Steffen.
A deep inhale followed by a long exhale extinguishes all 10 candles as Charlie blows across the table at his birthday cake. He can't believe it. He's finally 10. He watches as the smoke drifts from the candles and disperses throughout the room. Let's hope this doesn't set off the smoke alarm, Grandpa Harold complains. Don't want them alarms going off to give me another headache. Happy birthday, everyone else in the room cheers. To Charlie, the rest of the day was just a blur of presents and food, but there was one thing that stuck out during that day which seemed to bother him. While everyone else was having a good time visiting with each other, his Grandpa Harold never said much and only seemed to want to watch TV. Maybe he isn't feeling well, Charlie thinks to himself, but he thought back to all the times he had been with his grandparents. He thought back to last Christmas when he asked Harold if he wanted to see his new presents, and he replied with a short, "Maybe later." Harold never seemed to want to do anything, to have a good time, and all he seemed to do was complain about life. Nothing seemed to satisfy him. I guess he's just a negative person, Charlie thought, but it didn't make sense to him as to why. To him, he was a scary old man who never seemed like he had any interest in him. Charlie was no kid to just let things go. He wanted to know everything he could about new discoveries, and the newest one on his mind was his grandfather's neglect for him. Does my own grandfather even like me? Of all the times Charlie could remember, there had been no times where he had spent time with him, nor had a chance to. He finally built up the courage to talk to his mom. "Mom, I have a question." "What is it, Charlie?" "Does Grandpa even like me?" She stared back at him for a few seconds, thrown off by the question. "Of course he does, dear. He's your grandfather," she answered reassuringly. "But why doesn't he ever talk to me or want to spend time with me when he's here?" "Well, I guess I could tell you more about your grandfather than you think you know." Charlie sat and listened. Harold grew up much differently than you do today. His family had much less than us, and he had to do much more than you have to do today. As early as fifth grade, your grandfather worked multiple jobs in order to help support his family, as well as his aunt and two cousins. Him and his cousin Tim were best friends, and they did almost everything together as kids. Tim had much less than your father, and his uncle was an alcoholic, too. When your grandfather was 12, Tim and his father died in a car accident caused by his uncle's drinking. From that day, Harold was never the same, though he continued to support his family, but it was not enough. When he turned 18, he couldn't go to college, nor could he buy his own house because money was very tight. He decided to join the army, and he served for 8 years. During that time is when he met my mom, or your grandmother. They got married soon after. But after their honeymoon, Harold was called back to duty, where he went overseas and fought in Vietnam. During that time, many of his closest military friends, who he still calls his brothers, were killed in battle, and he was badly wounded in the leg. He was discharged and sent home. With all the things that have happened to him in his life, he has learned to not become close to too many people. This is because he feels he is going to lose them, since this has happened to him countless times through his life. This has gotten worse, though, the past few years, with your grandma going to the nursing home and all. But I guess if that's the way he wants to live, we should respect that, because no one else in our family has experienced the hardship and loss that he has. But if you want to get closer to him and learn more about him, you should take small steps in opening up to him, because I know he loves you as a grandson. Charlie understood this, but could never imagine all these things happening to his grandpa. He couldn't imagine losing his best friend, let alone losing so many in a war, while having to kill others. He tried to think of his best friend not being around, but it was beyond anything he could understand. As Charlie grew up, though, he used this knowledge and was able to spend time with Harold. Through the years, they have become more like family and understand each other more than they would have if Charlie had never learned why Grandpa Harold is the way he is.
Next up, Gabrielle Whitcomb discovers the ins and outs of rugby from members of the Tri-Village Rugby Club, who are hoping the sport will soon be brought to high schools across the nation.
Rugby has been one of the fastest growing sports in the world and has been recently added to the 2016 Summer Olympic Games. Wanting to get high schoolers involved in the sport before college, Tri-Village Rugby Club was established in 2004. Jamie Barlow describes exactly what rugby is.
All right, rugby is a fast-paced sport, kind of like a mix of soccer and football combined. For the positions are 1 through 15, 1 through 8 being the forwards, which is the big guys, one of the linemen, more or less, 9 being the scrum half, who is the quarterback, and 10 through 15 being skill backs, who are like running backs or DBs. The point of rugby is to advance the ball, like Bobby said. You want to advance the ball as much as possible, and 1 through 8, the forwards, try to get the ball, run forward as much as they can before they get tackled, place the ball, and have another forward ruck over, which helps keep possession. Rucking is having someone step over the ball carrier to defend him from another playing stepping over the ball carrier to get the ball, which is how a turnover happens while the game is played. And then you pick the ball from the ground, and you advance it forward. And it keeps moving like that, basically, until the scrum half decides to pass it out to the backs, who, you know, try to move through and or throughout the field and not exactly get tackled and score a try. And a try is awarded when a player is in the end zone, quite like a football field, and touches the ball to the ground.
Although these kids are taking part in rugby, it isn't a school sport. Bobby Hamilton and Jamie have thoughts on the future of rugby in schools.
Okay, I think it has like the potential to be a school sport. It probably needs to grow in popularity before, so more schools kind of jump onto it. But in cities like Cleveland, Cincinnati, it's already pretty big there. Just hasn't caught fire here in Columbus.
The only real issue would be, I think, the coaching. And I know a lot of people who have played in college that were willing to coach, but, you know, at the middle school level, you know, it needs to be a little bit more popular. And then in high school, kids can start playing and just get a couple more high schools with teams. I think it'll end up one day, kind of like lacrosse, how lacrosse built in popularity, it'll be a team sport.
This year, the team starts their season March 31st against Pickerington and has a total of 15 games this year. Hoping to make it to the state championship, the Bearcats have set goals for themselves.
I hope we get to win a D2, which is what we are right now, which is based off of last year's performance, a D2 state championship title. That would be really nice. I think we have the athletes to do it too. So,
starting in England as a variation of soccer and football, rugby has become a hot sport in UA. To get involved, go to www.trivillagerugby.com or playrugby.info.
Conditioning is an essential part of any athlete's life, and Alyssa Robeson discusses how Upper Arlington's strength and conditioning coach not only improves athletes' performance, but motivates them to be great as well.
With 32 different varsity and club sports offered at Upper Arlington High School, you may wonder how they are all able to perform at the peak of their athletic ability for every event. What pushes them to constantly keep striving for greatness in all aspects of their sport and working to stay in top physical condition year-round? Other than the many coaches that specialize in training their athletes for their particular sport, there is one man who spends countless hours in the high school's weight room, pushing each athlete individually and as a team. This man is Brian Coleman, and he holds the position of Upper Arlington High School's strength and conditioning coach.
I wanted to put myself in a position where I could work with a football team, work with athletic teams in preparation to win a state championship. I wanted to be at the highest possible level that you could be in high school, and that's what drawn me to Upper Arlington. I saw in the newspaper the ad to become the strength coach at this high school, and once I inquired to see what it was about, I thought it would be the perfect match for me. I definitely enjoyed being a teacher and a coach, but being a full-time strength coach allowed me to devote 100% of my time and energy into training athletes year-round, which is what I love to do the most.
Starting in 2010, Brian also serves as an assistant varsity coach for football and track and field. Brian believes in all of his students and pushes them all the way from the beginning to the very end of their high school career. Freshmen always feel welcomed by him, but he definitely doesn't go easy on them.
The first thing we noticed going from the middle school to the high school was really how different sports were. We had to put in a lot more hours. We actually started lifting for the first time. And I think Coach Coleman did a great job of, you know, transitioning us from middle school to the high school.
Through his life, Brian has always strived to be the best. And it is this same drive that helps him to push his student athletes to be the best athlete that they can be. His unbelievable passion for sports is played out through the kids he trains every day. It is more than a job to him, and the connections he builds with his students last longer than the 4 years they are at the high school. His involvement in the school goes further than just in the weight room. He helps to raise school spirit in any way he can, and is willing to do almost anything to achieve this goal.
Coleman positively affects my experience because in the weight room, he has so much energy that you like want to go in and you want to get better because you want to like show him that you're improving.
Whatever you're doing, do it all out. So when I coach, I encourage those kids every day to maximize that day, get the most out of it, and do your very best. And I think that if that type of approach, it doesn't matter what you're doing, you're going to be successful.
Playing a sport is not what makes a true athlete. It is the passion, love, hard work, and determination behind it that define a true athlete. Brian Coleman is the best at what he does, and all his hard work is truly for the love of the game.
This has been another episode of Youth Beat Radio. You can check us out on the web at youthbeat.osu.edu or find us on Facebook. You can also email us at youthbeat@osu.edu. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Thank you for listening.
Do you have what it takes to become the next most fit Buckeye? Join us May 12, 2012 at 10 a.m. to compete against dozens of other hopefuls vying for the title Most Fit Buckeye, a series of CrossFit events that will test your strength, stamina, and mental capabilities for a chance to win a collection of first place prizes. Brought to you by the Exercise Science Club. For information and registration, please email our team at osuexerciscienceclub@gmail.com. We'll see you there.
Youth Beat Radio is produced by youth from Central Ohio High Schools, youth groups, and universities. The show is sponsored by the School of Environment and Natural Resources at The Ohio State University, Ohio State University Extension, and local sponsors. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station or the sponsors.